Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Listen.
Hello and welcome to NBC IGN's Nintendo Podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week, the week of May 28th, I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. It's warm. I get to wear shorts, and I am excited about that. Seth Macy.
I don't have a catchphrase worked out for this week, but hello.
That wasn't, I didn't have one. That wasn't. I just said hello, how are you? That's not a catchphrase.
That's your famous catchphrase. So that Brian Altano shirt in the store. Hello, how are you?
That's perfect. And Brendan Graber.
See, catchphrase, whimmy wham wazzle.
Whoa.
That's a better shirt.
Now I'm going to expect you to say that.
That was from Futurama.
I need to say that at least three times an episode for that to really catch on as your catchphrase. Mm-hmm. Those are the rules. All right.
Well, hello, this week, and how are you?
Hello. I like shorts. This week,
they're comfy to wear.
They are. It's Splatoon's 5th anniversary, and we'll also be talking about the release of Minecraft Dungeons, which Seth Macy reviewed, and also a little bit about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, because we got that review up on IGN.com as well, and a few other things. But hey guys, let's start it off with Splatoon's 5th anniversary. Brendan.
Wimmy Wham Wazzle is not the catchphrase of that game. It's not. Wimmy.
It isn't.
Wimmy is a catchphrase.
So the original Splatoon launched on the Wii U on May 29th in 2015. it was revealed, I'm pretty sure, at an E3. What did you guys think when you first saw it?
E3 2014, I think. I remember being there. And I remember going like, what is this weird game about aquatic children paintballing each other? Yep. I honestly, I did not think much of it until thankfully they had their like global like demos that they let people play in. I'm like, all right, this is actually kind of a cool concept. And like they turned that whole like family friendly, let's not use guns when we can just have paint and ink. And it actually made it approachable for all types of players, I think.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea it would blow up to what it is today. I thought it was, I guess, kind of like gimmicky, and I thought it was interesting, but I thought it would just be a one-off, like, oh, this is Nintendo's answer to a first-person shooter or like a third-person shooter. And it looks fine, but it actually ended up being one of the most successful new Nintendo IPs in recent history. Like Splatoon 2 launched on the Switch on July 2017 and sold 10.13 million units, and is actually, insane. It's the eighth best-selling Switch game. There are like Splatoon concerts, like community is rallied around this game. What do you guys think overall about Splatoon? What is your favorite?
Like, aesthetically, I think it's one of the most like impressive and fun games ever made. And I think specifically for Nintendo, it sort of marked this ushering in of like the newer generation of Nintendo developers internally that were young and creative in bold new ways and wanted to do something like certifiably insane in the best way possible. I think that it really breaks the mold of the Nintendo style guide. Like the Nintendo style guide is generally, in terms of like video game protagonists, is about saving the world and like cleaning things up, collecting everything. And this is about, I mean, even Animal Crossing is about like sort of making a tidy home, and like Mario, like he finds things, he picks them up, he removes them. There's an entire game where Mario is cleaning, you know, graffiti off of walls like a cop. And Splatoon comes around and they're like, destroy everything. It's you're the better you wreck this place, the more points you'll get, the more you'll celebrate it. Like smack people and, you know, hit them with paint and just blow up stuff. Like it's so messy and it's so fun. And it's so, I would say, like creatively adventurous from so much of what Nintendo's done, which is awesome because it still fits that perfect sort of like that scale of it. You can play it as a kid and you can play it as an adult and you can play it as a novice and you can play it as like an actual like professional gamer who wants to win tournaments and stuff like that. It's super super fun. I'm so glad that those characters embedded their way into like Amiibo and Smash Brothers and so many other little things. Like they are now part of the Nintendo family forever.
I feel like Nintendo found a really good way with this title to kind of engage their community in a meaningful way. And having the ability for people to congregate in that lobby and actually like post Miiverse art all over the place that would then show up in your matches and go like, hey, let's like rally the community to go, what would you rather fight about? Like pizza or burgers? And have people like draw these impressive things on their Wii U touchscreen and then eventually the Switch. Like it was a way to kind of like have people come together and not just be, you know, in the competitive aspect, like, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, where everyone's yelling at each other. Like, this is like, it felt a lot more wholesome. Like, even if you were against each other, you still wanted to have fun with each other.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, for a game that expressive, that will let you draw pretty much whatever you wanted and say whatever you wanted through various means of voice chat, like, the audience is pretty chill. Like, you know, there's a lot of sort of community there. There's a lot of like, I remember like just walking around that lobby, gawking at all the pixel art and stuff that people were making. Cause it's just so incredibly cool. And it's also, this was a really special game for Wii U because the Wii U, I think had a very tough time sort of defining itself as a console. I mean, it brought us the Switch and it brought us a bunch of, you know, it brought us like, you know, Super Mario 3D World and, towards its tail end Breath of the Wild and stuff like that. But in terms of really carving its it never got an original Zelda game. It never got an original Animal Crossing game. It got Mario Kart, obviously, which was then stolen by Switch. But The Splatoon was like one of the like definitive original titles on that system, outside of something like Nintendo Land, that I think that like really showed that there was just like a whole new wave of creativity coming from Nintendo. And I'm really glad like that the sequel spun out to Switch, and it's now by all means going to be a franchise. Like that's one of the better successfully selling Nintendo franchises ever. So yeah, bring on more Splatoon.
Yes. I also want to say that, I'm sorry, just want to quickly point out that their commitment to free updates like hugely improved the tail life of this game. Mm-hmm. And like they're like going like, hey, not only will give you like new weapon skins, but like we'll do new modes, new ranked battles, new maps entirely. Like there was always a reason to come back to it well after that game had launched.
Including, of course, we have to talk about Splatfest and like how they did such a great they did a great job at implementing these timed community events. And for example, so we just actually had another Splatfest, the first one in a while. And again, yeah, the last of it. Again, it was Mayo versus Ketchup. And back in 2017, Mayo won. So I assumed Mayo would win again because it's obviously the superior condiment. But mm-hmm. Brendan's giving me a look. But this time, Ketchup won. And I think it's, I don't know, it brings conversation outside of the game. Like even Splatoon did a great job at implementing mascots as well, which is something that Nintendo is just great at, right? Like every single one of their characters, even if you've never played its game, like you know what that character is. Mm-hmm. And like to make characters like Callie and Marie and Pearl and Marina so iconic that people who don't necessarily play Splatoon will still know those characters, are kind of knowledgeable of, I don't know if I want to call it drama like between that, but with the fandom between all of the different characters, I think it's really interesting and fun, and not a lot of games have pulled that off.
Right.
Yeah. It's also, it's super funky, which I
aesthetically, this game is like one of the coolest franchises ever. Like the colors mm-hmm. are amazing. The character design is amazing. The sound design is amazing. Like every splat is so perfect. And like, I can hear every weapon like in my head right now. And the mm-hmm. music is phenomenal. And when, you know, like the loading screen, when I found out, oh wait, if I like push up on the left stick, it sort of changes the pitch. And if I push down on the right stick, it sort of changes the tempo. So I'm like, just playing around. Just having a great time in the loading screen with the, like the stylish, amazing game that my kids are bananas for. My son is up to issue like 8 of the manga or whatever issue.
Oh my God.
It's a great, he loves it. This is hilarious.
There's also like, I think it has like a criminally underrated set of single player campaigns, which I think, yeah, it gets kind of swept under the rug. Not surprisingly, because like the multiplayer is so robust, but I think the single player is pretty like a low level Super Mario Galaxy at times. Like it feels like it does some really special, really smart platforming stuff. There's some really interesting boss fights. I love the style of fashion in this game, like being able to wear like big, fat, chunky high tops and like a leather jacket and aviators and run around and like throw paint everywhere. Like there's like hip hop DJs in the game and like characters that reference Tupac and Biggie. Like it's awesome. It's so cool. Yeah,
I reviewed the Splatoon 2 Octo Expansion DLC, and I think it remains one of my favorite DLC packages, even though it was almost all single player. Like the way they structured the level design, the way you had to traverse the subway system using like this like codec that came out of like Metal Gear Solid 5. And it was so cool, like how they like basically had this series of levels and new ideas that never really came up in multiplayer. They were all contained within the single player environment of like, hey, what if we had you shoot a bowling ball or an eight ball across like this billiard thing and then use that like not to get destroyed?
So I just want to take a second to reminisce a little bit. So my first E3 with IGN, my very first E3 appointment was actually with Splatoon 2 with Brendan and Miranda.
I remember that.
Yeah. And we went there to cover and check out Salmon Run, the new PvE mode in Splatoon 2. And I remember it being actually like quite challenging. I think
we may or may not have done great.
I think we did okay. And it was all thanks to Brendan. Brendan carried us. I remember that.
Like, screaming the entire time, though.
We were all screaming, but it was a great time. That was actually the first preview I ever wrote for IGN as well. It was Splatoon 2. So thanks, Splatoon.
That's like the first big Nintendo review I ever did was for Splatoon 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
I think Splatoon feathered to put in your cap.
What?
So that's a good feather to put in your cap.
Yeah.
Splatoon 2 review.
Please take
I thought you said cat. I was like,
I did too. I was like, yeah, my cat likes feathers. Yeah, what?
There is a pretty cool cat in that game.
Don't put a feather in a cat.
No.
Please don't put a feather in a cat.
9 out of 10 veterinarians recommend against your cat.
I was thinking like in the mouth, like she likes to chew on feathers.
Or when they eat a chicken and then they just.
Yeah. And then like feathers. Yeah.
And then it opens their mouth inside because it's actually a chicken hawk.
That classic moment when you feed your cat its first whole chicken that still has feathers on.
So my tangent time. My when I first got my cat, she still went outside because she was a street cat when we first got her. Mm-hmm. And I came home one day and I went upstairs and there were just feathers everywhere, just everywhere, all over the floor. In the bedroom, in the hallway, leading up the stairs, feathers all over the place. No bird carcass, no blood. Just feathers. I don't know how she accomplished that, but I commend her for not making me clean up a bird carcass.
Wow.
But also after that, we gave her a collar with a bell so she could no longer surprise birds. So anyway, that's my cat and feather story tangent. But anyway, back to Splatoon. Where do you think the franchise can go from here, and what improvements do you still want to see?
I got a crazy idea.
Check this out.
Splatoon 3. Boom.
No,
it would not in this lifetime.
No one saw that one coming.
I do like how as the single player story has progressed. Like in Splatoon 1, you were Agent like 3 or 4. And you found out that Callie Marie were Agent 1 and 2. And then Splatoon 2, you had to find whoever lost the last Splatfest. I believe that's how they figured out who was going to be the missing person.
Yeah.
And then you recruited the Pearl Marina to help you. And then there was the Octo expansion where you fought the mind-controlled Agent 4. So I'd love to see the next one have even more callbacks to the previous two games. And maybe something happens to Marina and Pearl where you're now having to find them or expand upon that adventure series of like these callbacks to previous characters. And I would also really like to see them actually take some of the ideas that they've only had in single player and put them in multiplayer maps. Because like having like the rails or like these crazy platforming things would be kind of cool to see in more of the forefront and actually making your team figure out how to traverse areas as well as ink everything.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a reminder, Pearl won the Splatfest of Pearl versus Marina. So if we do see Splatoon 3, I assume that we'll have Pearl will be more prominent.
Marina is the bad person now.
Yeah.
Can I give my serious answer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mario versus Rabbids, but with Splatoon. Like that kind of
game. An XCOM with Splatoon?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Squad-based tactical Splatoon game.
With Rabbids? Rabbids and Splatoon?
Why not? Throw them in there.
Splatoon and Rabbids?
There it is.
I don't...
Alrighty.
I mean, if I hadn't seen Mario vs. Rabbids, I said that would never work. But then I saw that game and played it. I was like, okay, never mind.
Like, actually, it's fun, yeah.
Yeah. I've been proven wrong.
And I also just wanted to take one more second to mention, when I went to the Nintendo Live event last fall, there was a Splatoon concert. And I know I talked about it quite a bit on that episode, but for all of you Splatoon fans, even if you're not a Splatoon fan, you guys should go look up that recording because it was wild. It was like a holograph? Is that the correct? I want to say like
Miku,
hologram. Holograph is like holographic Pokemon card. It's not the same thing. Hologram.
I want to see Hatsune Miku in Splatoon 3.
And is it
true? That'd be great.
Music was played by live real squids. Which I thought
real life squids.
It's very bold. The whole
sprayed ink over the entire audience. It was a mix between Guar and Gallagher.
And then they were turned
against the microphone. That's how they get the noises.
And then they were turned into calamari after.
Hmm.
Seth, please go Photoshop Gallagher.
Gallagher.
But besides the voice recordings, it was a live band. And it was very cool. And it was very fun to see people of all ages in the crowd be getting hyped up.
Sounds like the funnest thing, yeah. Like,
dude, Ebb and Flow is still one of my favorite jams from Splatoon.
It was a
good track.
Good time. It was a great time. So thank you guys for reminiscing about Splatoon with me for its 5th anniversary.
Craziness.
I know. And I have this spot here for topic 2 in our run of show, but there is no topic 2. So we're going to move right on to small news because there's not a whole lot going on this week. So first up in small news, like I said multiple weeks ago, how every week we're going to report on something that's being canceled because of COVID. This week's event is BlizzCon. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny. I'm sorry. BlizzCon has been canceled and an online event has been planned for 2021. Why 2021? They said because of logistics and different factors involved. And because of that, any BlizzCon online alternative will most likely be sometime early next year in 2021. So yeah, I guess look out for more information on the online portion of that. I'm really interested to see how all of these different events are going to, how they're going to transfer to online. Like, what do you guys think?
It's like, how are they going to do it? For the best sometimes, like they're like, instead of having to try to like make up something on the spot when you might not even have a lot of info to give out, like they're going to go on stage again and say, oh, guess what? Diablo's still in development. Still can't see it yet. Like, I think it's the same thing for Nintendo. Is like, don't come out and say when you don't have anything to show. So yeah. If Nintendo doesn't have an E3 presence this year or a lack of E3 presence, that's fine. Like, if they have nothing to say, why not? There's no reason to make up an event just to like have filler.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that all these companies that are canceling, you know, the E3 demos that they're going to have, just like let people play those. Just release them onto the eShop or whatever, or the BlizzCon shop.
Even if they're timed, you know, mm-hmm. like if you remember what like Nintendo did on 3DS, which is kind of annoying as a collector, but they let you download demos and they would have like you can only play them like 30 times or 20 times or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if they did sort of like a timed demo drop, if Blizzard was porting something cool to Switch and they're like, you can play it this afternoon, like pretend you're at E3. And then it goes away.
Stand in line.
I mean,
back to our previous topic, one of the big successes of Splatoon was the global test fire. Is mm-hmm. having people play that early and go like, wow, this game actually does have some cool concepts.
That would be, I think, the best. And I'm wondering if they want it to have a level of exclusivity and not let literally everyone play these demos. They want just a small portion. And I wonder if they could do that by sending out like email links to people who have Nintendo accounts with email set up, and then having like the first, I don't know, 2,000 people that click on this link will get a code to access a demo or something like that. So like increase
selling those like online tickets for years. Cause when I was for news, like I would get one of those tickets so that I could cover, you know, it's like I watched the event, like just give, you know, a 15-minute demo of Diablo 4 or whatever on Switch to everyone who paid the $35 or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I really like that.
You know, I'm not a businessman, but
I'm like, I've been tracking the way a lot of these sort of independent film festivals have been doing stuff like this. And they've been doing really cool things where they'll basically charge you like a day ticket or a weekend ticket, which gives you kind of endless access to all the stuff they have on the site. And you have to go through the sort of like a specific player that they have. It's like a proprietary system.
Real.
Yeah, it's Real Player. Welcome back, Real Player.
13.0.
We've missed
back
you.
In the grave.
I have no idea if Real Player is dead or not. It's probably still alive. But yeah, I think that would be a really good solution for it. It's to sort of like have panels and Q&As and then drop demos and let people who paid for ticket access to get in have that too. Also give them an exclusive key that gets them into the online merchandise store if they want to buy stuff like that.
Frankly,
doing like pets and WoW, like just give them a cool pet. Frankly, this is something I wish Nintendo did all year round. I love Nintendo merchandise and I love Nintendo's E3 presence, and it would be really cool if they said, well, this is what we were gonna do at PAX, and instead we're gonna do this over here. And you know, for anybody who signs up, you get this swag and we'll mail it to you, or it's printable or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, the question isn't really like, how are these companies going to figure out a digital solution to this? It's, will they ever go back to like these big conventions? Like, I don't
have my little Smash badge.
Yeah, those are great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what all of these companies going to do with the merch that they had planned. Like, I don't, like, I was talking to Brian earlier, but like this pillow back here, like we assume that was something that IGN had ordered for as merch for E3. So now they just send it to us to at least have some use, right?
Yeah,
so
I wonder I think it was set dressing for like our E3 live shows and stage shows on the E3 floor. And so, yeah, I don't know if they're going to mail you a couch, maybe some microphone.
But I wonder what all the other companies are going to do with the merch that they had ordered specifically for these event shows, if they're going to be available great if online. They have
a bunch of leftover E3 2020 shirts, they give it E3 2021.
just like everyone just crosses it out and adds a one.
Well, like some companies are like kind of handling it better than others. Like I was at a supermarket the other day and there was just tons of like Wonder Woman 1984 or whatever, like chips. Doritos. Yeah, Doritos. And it's just like, well, that movie's not coming out this summer, but like Doritos are still good, I guess. So keep those out there. Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, that like that alternate dimension when like two teams go head to head in the Super Bowl and there's a bunch of guys in the parking lot that get T-shirts printed up, and then like one side always says like they won but they didn't, and then they mail those
with elections, and they just they dump the extra shirts like in a ditch somewhere.
Exactly. Or they mail them to like, you know, people in need.
And I would hope so. I would hope that they donate.
That's a better place to put them.
Yeah.
Please donate your shirts that say 2020 is an awesome year to someone who can use it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they can put the, you know, I survived Nintendo's Super Mario E3 booth 2020 t-shirt on like an online store somewhere and let us buy it. Cause that would be a fun relic.
It would be. So yeah, I guess we'll just have to find out what everyone's doing for their online events when they happen. But thank you for those speculations. And also, real quick, I just wanted to mention that on Tuesday of this week, there's a thing called the Wholesome Direct put out by the Wholesome Direct Collective, or just the Wholesome Collective, rather. And it was an indie game showcase with 50-plus games. It was only almost 40 minutes long. And I know not all of these games are confirmed to be coming to Switch, and some aren't even set to be released until sometime next year. But seeing as how so many indie Steam games are coming to Switch, I assume a lot of these games will also come to Switch. And we do have some confirmed names, like Spiritfarer, which we saw at E3 last year, was also shown in this Direct, as well as like Ooblets and a bunch of other games that look, I don't know, really wholesome. So I enjoyed watching it. If you want to watch a nice wholesome video about video games, I recommend it.
Same. I definitely recommend that whole video. I previewed Spiritfarer at last E3, and I really liked what I played so far. So I can't wait to see what they do with making that game have a really cool look at what it's like to let go of someone and like look at death in like a very comforting way, instead of the way that we all kind of like are depressed about. Like, it's just a very beautiful game.
Yay. I'm excited for that one. I don't know why I said yay.
You can give hugs to everybody in that game. There's a dedicated hug button.
There you go. That's a yay right there.
That's a yay. It's a yay game.
Yay. Yay hugs. And also in small news, the Dead Cells, there's another free live update for Dead Cells, and it's a bestiary update, and it comes with new enemies, two new items, a crowbar, and this is a portable door. I meant to say portal door. Speech to text, I guess, doesn't understand what a portal.
I'm looking at affordable doors on
home. Yeah, not an affordable door. A portal door. A portable door.
Portador.
And a lot more. So if you are like Dead Cells, there's a free update and you should probably go play it.
If you like affordable doors, you should look elsewhere.
Affordable doors. I feel like we're going to open a portal of affordable doors if we keep saying these words in combination.
All right, let's move on. That was all the small news for this week. And let's talk about games out this week, including the important stuff, as Seth Macy has pointed out, Minecraft Dungeons out on the 26th for only $20.
Yeah, great bargain. That's a must buy. That's a very fun game. I gave it a 7 out of 10. It doesn't really do anything spectacularly different. In fact, it plays it very safe, which, you know, is kind of a bummer. But it's also, you know, I think my subhead was Dungeon Crawler 101, like Fisher Price, my first Diablo, basically. Like, it's fun. It's not hard to understand. Great multiplayer. And it looks gorgeous, and the music is fantastic, and it's just Minecraft. It's, you know, it's if you barrel through the story, it's not very long, but if you take your time, look for some loot, yeah, there's some meat on them bones.
It sounds like this would be
really good to hear.
Yeah, it sounds like this would be a good first dungeon crawler to play with, like, your kids or something. Or
yeah, I actually played it with my oldest son, and he would have given it a 9 out of 10.
Whoa, okay.
He doesn't work for IGN. He didn't even have a job.
What is that? Sounds like the check cleared, Seth.
The Fisher Price fun bucks.
Oh, no.
I'm totally down to play that. It's free on Xbox Game Pass, but I was actually just going to buy it on Switch just because I'm stupid with money, and I feel like that game feels like it might just feel more right at home with my pro controllers.
Yeah. I mean, Diablo 3 I've said it a million times on Switch, is like the funnest way to play it, I think. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely a good candidate for Switch. And also in the future, they're going to implement crossplay. They don't have it now, but they've said that they
were working on it.
So yeah. So
I feel like dungeon crawlers don't get enough love. There's not enough of them. And so having more in that field is great.
I think it's just like,
they're going to play it, be like, oh, remember that? That's what got me started on my love.
I think it's just because there are already games out that already do it so well, like Diablo 3 and the other one? Path of Exile?
Right.
I mean, that's free. And they're both...
Torchlight 2 is also really fun.
They're all fun.
I mean, who doesn't like a good co-op game where you get loot and get to be like instant gratification every time you open a chest, right? And get a cool sword? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just such an integral part of gameplay and is such a great satisfying loop.
Oh yeah, I have a crossbow. It's an orange, which is the highest rarity level. It shoots out 5, but then I have an enchantment where there's a random chance that each arrow will shoot 5 arrows out also, but it also has an enchantment where it sometimes will pass through enemies, so it's just like, it's brutal.
That's great. What I like to hear. You can, like, a multiplying piercing arrow.
Yeah feels good.
So I have a question about Minecraft Dungeons. How does the co-op work?
It's online or local.
Oh, great. So if you play local, can you each have different characters and play by yourselves, or is it in one game state?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to.
Okay.
The thing is, the characters, they don't matter. There's no different classes. It's just skins. It's just completely cosmetic differences. It's, you know, your gear and equipment is sort of how you customize your characters, but there's no set classes or anything like that.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if you can just like, can you just like play and then maybe like you're 6 hours in and have someone drop it and be like, here's a bunch of my crap, please put the crap on yourself.
It's pronounced Minecraft.
Actually, I don't believe that's possible, because the only way you can get rid of items is by salvaging them, which you know, they turns it into gems, and whatever enchantment it has, you get those enchantment points back, which is nice. There's no like penalty for salvaging something. You don't lose like an enchantment point. You get all your enchantment points back, which is great if you have like 17 enchantments on one.
Yeah, that's very forgiving.
Yeah,
Seth, I was going to buy this right now. It's $19.99, but I noticed there's also a hero pass for $9.99. Why wasn't that part of your review?
Because the hero pass is not out yet.
Why didn't you review the hero pass that isn't out yet? How can I trust you as a journalist is what I'm getting to the bottom of here.
I don't have to stand up for these questions. My review is my opinion, and that is final.
You don't have to stand up at all. We're all sitting.
I won't stand up because I'm wearing sweatpants, and it doesn't match my collared shirt. I'm very conscious about this story.
All right, I'm going to buy the game now because I really want like a fun local co-op.
It's fun. I think like your little girl watching it, she'll just be like, oh, because there's like so many cool, fun, exciting, satisfying things happening. Like even the sounds of finding stuff is just like, the sound design is excellent as well.
No, I'm totally into it.
So we were just talking about Minecraft Dungeons, which Seth gave a 7 out of 10, which is good. He says his son would have given it a 9 out of 10, but he doesn't work here, so don't listen to him.
Nope.
Not yet.
Well, after that course of that review that Seth just botched.
Or a second opinion.
Second opinion
from my good boy.
Also coming out this week is Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, out on the 29th for $60. This is what a lot of you have been waiting for, and a lot of us have been waiting for. I know a lot of people like Seth and Zach and some other people in the office are going to be playing a lot of this game over the next week. So we're saving our a bigger discussion about this game for next week. but I just wanted to briefly mention that our review is up, and Travis Northup gave it an 8 out of 10, and he says Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition is the remaster that this respected JRPG deserves, even when it feels like it doesn't go far enough in places. 8 years later, some of its customization systems and an overly grindy structure certainly haven't aged well, but its story and combat are just as great as ever. The new future-connected story chapter isn't particularly inspired, but the impressive graphical overhaul and welcome, if small, quality of life improvements make the best version of Xenoblade Chronicles we've ever had.
Oh my god, I'm so excited.
You guys stoked?
He's complaining about grinding. I'm like, oh, I love grinding.
Yeah, JRPGs, they kind of they age very strangely depending on your tastes, where if you love the old systems, then having like a remake or a remaster of that is just like, oh, that's more of what I want.
Yeah.
But some people want that quality of life. Like, no, give me like a variable grindy rate. So I do like how everyone finds something different to love in these JRPGs that evolve over time.
Yeah, I noticed there was some discussion about this score versus scores we've given to previous versions of the game. Mm-hmm. And so I should probably point out that our review rubric is slightly different this time around. We are basically just going with solid numbers. So if something got an 8.3 and this got an 8, there's actually no way of knowing if this 8 is secretly an 8.3 or an 8.8.
Yeah.
Or an 8.5.
Mm-hmm. Is it a just, great or is it a great?
It's just hanging out in the eight zone somewhere within those the walls of that large numerical universe. So,
I think,
yeah.
I want to say it's safe to assume, but it probably isn't. But if something was previously given like an 8.4, it probably would have been given an 8. But if something was given like an 8.9, it probably would have just been given a 9.
Potentially.
But potentially. Because Dan, I think, says, oh, it's an 8.9, it's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Dan's always been like, who it's knows?
About the letter, the word association rather than the number. So mm-hmm. a great 0.9, still a great.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times I'll send a review into Dan for edits with a score, and he'll be like, I read your review, and this actually sounds more like an 8 by like the words that you're using to describe mm-hmm. that game sounds great. It doesn't sound like it's amazing. And then I'll back and I read. I'm like, God, Dan's right.
Wow, I can't believe I hate
God
this
damn it!
How does this guy?
Just one more reason why your son should take your job. So pile them up.
He actually spends like his free time learning Premiere Pro. So I'm doomed. Like,
oh yeah, you're
have way more skills.
Oh man.
When you're done, when you guys are eating dinner tonight, tell him Brian from IGN, big fan. We're ready to hire him as soon as your father wants to stop working.
He'll send you his like reel, probably.
I have another friend whose son is around 16, and he also is editing. He also edits videos. There are so many teenagers who are just like doing YouTube videos now and are getting really good at it. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Why wasn't I so? I don't know.
We had so
much work ethic.
My wife works with kids like in like first, second grade, and they're doing, you know, at home stuff with students. So they're using like Zoom. And I'm like, at that age, I barely knew what the internet was. Like, and they're like, no, yeah, I'm on Zoom. Don't worry. I got the settings all like max. I'm like, how old are you? What?
When I was a kid,
was I this smart? I don't think so.
On our like a VHS shoulder mounted camera, and you would film them chronologically because there was no way to edit them. Like nobody had two VCRs you could hook up and switch them, swap them out and everything. So yeah, real low quality stuff.
Oh, the show just got way, way old.
That's me. Fine.
That's us. The oldest
person.
Kids today are doing computer stuff. It's crazy.
How do they even get online?
Always on their screens.
My grandson helps me with my Wi-Fi and my eWorm.
All right, look, my original comment wasn't about the fact that they're using computers, but the fact that they're doing the work to learn a skill on their own accord and produce things that they make, which I guess...
Because there might be money at the end of that tunnel, that's why.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome.
That's great. That's awesome.
I try to remind them, I'm like, this is a desirable job that you should be definitely leaning into.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Also out this week are all of the 2K games out on the 29th of May. All
of them. Everyone.
Well, quite a few. We've got XCOM 2 Collection for $50, which includes XCOM 2, the War of the Chosen expansion, and all DLC. Any XCOM fans?
It's like Mario plus Rabbids, but there's aliens.
Cool. Sounds great. I'm sold. So if you like Mario plus Rabbids, but like the grittier tone of aliens, XCOM 2. I'm sorry, I haven't played this. I know it's one of Dan Stapleton's like favorite games of all time.
If you love probability and having a 90% chance to hit and then missing and having your guy go crazy, run into a fire and die, like, yeah. Kind of like Fire Emblem in that way.
Okay. Sounds Fire Emblem, but with aliens. No.
Sure.
Also out this week is Bioshock the Collection, which includes Bioshock, Bioshock 2, and Bioshock Infinite, and all of the single-player DLC. All of these are available individually for $20 each. Bioshock's great. It is a very good game. I know Miranda Sanchez is actually streaming Bioshock currently. Not, like, currently as I'm speaking, but, like, within these past couple of weeks currently.
It's like Mario plus Rabbids, but this is this giant one in a suit. And there's the guy saying, would you kindly, and then Mario has a wrench and he beats someone up with it.
It's like XCOM, but everybody's drowning and on drugs.
That sounds like my kind of time.
Yeah, me too. I'll take it. I'm actually weirdly fascinated at how Bioshock Infinite runs on Switch. I understand that first Bioshock's like 15 years old at this point. So, like, that makes sense to me. But Bioshock Infinite was a, like, pretty heavy-duty game. And so
it was an impressive PS3 game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely like there's like some not so great textures in there, namely like the pineapples. There's like a bunch of like crates of fruit that are basically just like a flat object. But yeah, that's like a big meaty game with a lot going on. And so I'm fascinated to see how it runs on Switch.
And actually,
if you can get a Switcher and Doom on a Switch, I have high hopes.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, everyone likes Bioshock, but I really liked Bioshock Infinite. I haven't finished a lot of single player shooters, and this is one of them. But I thought it was just really interesting to me. It was fun. It's a good time. And also coming out this week is a bunch of Borderlands, like all of the Borderlands for the Switch. Borderlands Game of the Year Edition for $30, which includes the first game and all DLC. Borderlands The Handsome Collection for $40, which includes Borderlands 2, the pre-sequel, and most DLC, and then Borderlands Legendary Collection for $50, which includes all of the above, but isn't available digitally, so you have to order the physical.
Yeah, which copy. Is weird. I was looking all over. Tom was like, "Is this not available digitally?"
Yeah,
and so I went on the hunt.
Yeah,
couldn't find it available anywhere, which is kind of strange. But that I would go weird. With the Legendary Collection personally, especially. I mean, yeah, you can't get it digitally, but who cares?
Collecting it's more cost effective. Yeah.
Yeah. You get a little, cool little Borderlands cartridge, and all the Borderlands are in there. It's unbelievable.
And if you guys don't know, Borderlands is a co-op looter shooter, and it is a lot of fun. I've always had a lot of fun.
And it has the same kind of humor.
Borderlands seems like one of my favorite games of all time. Like, I played so many hours of that with my friends. We would squad up and just play. And
no, same. When Borderlands 2 came out, we had like a LAN party set up in my like tiny college apartment with like three different TVs and a bunch of people hanging out playing Borderlands.
All my friends switched to another platform. I was very sad.
Aw, sucks. I'm sorry.
I still played it eventually.
That was a moment of silence.
We're all pressing F for respect.
These trying times.
No, I definitely highly recommend Borderlands, especially if you've never played it before, and especially if you have friends to play it with. I think I was so drawn to it because it also has like it's like a shooter with RPG elements.
Yep.
Yeah. Borderlands has been out forever. You should know about it. Yeah, go play it. It's on the Switch now.
Games, and then on a tangent, go play Tales from the Borderlands by Telltale because that is also a really
also good very good. Mm-hmm. There are a few smaller games coming out, but I'm just going to very quickly run through them. There's Bug Fables Everlasting Sapling, which is an indie turn-based RPG. Shantae and the Seven Sirens, the fifth Shantae game, a platformer series developed by WayForward. Atomicrops, which is a strange post-apocalyptic mix between Stardew Valley and Enter the Gungeon. You play a farm mutant crops while defending them from monsters and spend your profits on upgrades and defensive. Tom likes this one a lot. By the way, Tom Marks, thank you again so much for the descriptions for all of these smaller games that you recommend. And this one is Turmoil, which is a great game from 2016 about drilling for oil and growing your oil empire.
Oh, hell yeah. There Will Be Blood the game.
Yeah, Tom likes this one too. Thank you,
I'm
Tom.
I'm really excited to dig into Bug Fables. It's very Paper Mario-y. I started it on Steam, and I think I want to get it on Switch. Just play it on the couch.
Yeah, it says it has 800 reviews on Steam and it's 98% positive, which is crazy. Nice. So a lot of people like that game a lot.
And the only two people are ones that are afraid of bugs.
It's actually one guy hates the concept of fables in general.
He's very literal.
Do you think we could get Blathers to play that game? Anyway, those are all of the games out this week. We talked about Minecraft Dungeons, Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, all of the 2K games, including XCOM, Bioshock, and Borderlands. And the smaller picks were Bug Fables, Shantae, Atomicrops, and Turmoil. Please forgive me for abbreviating those titles. Let's talk about games that we're actually playing this week. Brian, why don't you go first?
I actually jumped back into Animal Crossing because I'm doing a very special thing with IGN. We are basically shooting kind of like a MTV Cribs version of Animal Crossing, where I am visiting celebrities and notable people's towns, and they are showing off their island and giving me tours. And so we'll have more to share on that soon. But it's been super, super fun so far.
I'm so excited for that.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's really, really cool.
Can you spoil any of the people who you're visiting?
Let's see. Cliff Bleszinski, Shannon Woodward, who is on Westworld. We are going to see Gary Whitta, obviously. Some old friends of IGN, Naomi Kyle, Alana Pierce, Jessica Chobot.
Nice.
Yeah, we put together a whole press release on this that we published on the site yesterday, along with the first wave of our rollout for announcements for IGN Summer of Gaming, which will hopefully, you know, help to fill the E3 shaped hole in your heart, which is a weird shape for a hole in your heart. But all of them really would be a weird shape because it's bad. We're basically going to turn this into like a big charity live stream and raise a bunch of money for COVID relief. And so definitely check that out. It's going to be super, super fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. Seth, what about you? What are you playing?
I played Minecraft Dungeons, but I didn't play it on Switch.
Of course.
It doesn't count.
Hi. Well, it's on Switch. It's fine.
That's you true. Can lie like you did in your review.
Some people will take you seriously, Brian. Be careful.
I'm just joking.
People were kind of a little bummed out. They were saying that I didn't sound very enthusiastic in my video, which is the opposite of how I sound in every video. I'm always like, this is a game that I found that was lacking a little bit.
Minecraft Dungeons is an exquisite masterpiece, and I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Minecraft Dungeons, it's a game.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. I did. That's my objective review. Brendan, what are you playing this week?
Work-wise, I'm still digging some Animal Crossing stuff, and I just finished doing a guide for Maneater. It's coming to Switch soon. It's that Shark Boy game where you...
Yeah.
Ooh, and then, I've been playing a ton of that game. I cannot wait for that to come to Switch.
Yeah,
honestly.
It's a good Switch game, I think. It's like a very like 2008 era open world kind of type thing where you go from region to region, you just chomp on people, get collectibles, that fun stuff. It's very like, it's like gaming comfort food.
Yeah, Jared Petty described it as sort of like an underwater Crackdown, and I think that's so perfect. It's even got like a cartoonish over-the-top announcer in the way of Chris Parnell from SNL.
Yeah, I thought it reminded me in like the weirdest way, it reminded me of like a very polished Goat Simulator.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. I recommend awesome.
You're playing, they have these collectible landmarks you can find, and every time you hit one, he'll like comment on them, and there are some like really funny Easter eggs they've hidden. I won't spoil any of them, but like the remarks he makes when you find some of them are just like, you do a double take and you're like, wait, is this referencing this? Like, oh my god, this is hilarious. When I'm not working on game stuff, my friends and I have been playing Golf with Your Friends, which just finally out of early access. It's really, really fun, like a putt simulator, but crazy maps.
Yeah, they talked about it a lot last week.
Yeah, they just released the what was it? There's an indie game that's in a jail, and I'm blanking on the name.
Prison Hard
Escapists. Oh, I think there's like an escapist map, which is really clever. And then a bit of Fallout 76 on the side. I've fell back into that hole. I'll get out soon. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks for telling me what games you're playing this week. I'm playing the try to use your hands as least often as possible game and playing DDR. So thanks DDR for existing, and I'm still salty that they stopped making those games.
Yeah.
I want DDR on the Switch, and I want a mat on the Switch so I can play
Step on the Switch.
On the subway.
Yeah, bring my mat. Bam, this is my spot. No, I want to play the oh my gosh, I'm completely blanking. The Legend of Zelda.
Tears of Hyrule?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I want to play that with an actual dance mat. That would be my number one thing that I want right now.
Has anyone rigged that up?
I'm sure someone has, but
if people are playing like Dark Souls on a banana, like, come on.
They can do whatever they want. Like, you can do it. I'm just not that technically inclined.
2020. Do whatever you want.
Exactly. And now let's move on to question block. I think we can squeeze in at least one question. Let's get it started. This one is from Marshall Gorduke. He says, my name is Marshall Gorduke, and I'm proud to have autism. As a Metroid autistic fan, I would love Metroid to expand like never before. I believe if Metroid has a future, the series has to evolve. Beyond isolation, exploration, dystopia, I would love Metroid to broaden itself with characters, voice acting, ancient races, kind of like Mass Effect, galaxies, RPG, multiplayer, etc. If Zelda, Pokemon, and Fire Emblem can do it, why not Metroid? Would you be okay with this to revitalize a franchise? Not so much Star Wars, but more like Mass Effect. Why do you want Metroid Prime games on Nintendo Switch? I would like to see them on Switch, but I'm nervous, worried, anxious, cautious, and scared that nobody cares. I don't think you understand that Metroid isn't Animal Crossing, Fire Emblem, or Splatoon when it comes to sales and broadening audience. If Prime Trilogy, Samus Returns, and others didn't sell well because of complexity and not being family-friendly and not being accessible to younger generations, how in the world will this be any different? And you know what, Marshall? You're not wrong. Metroid has not been selling that well over the past couple of years. Metroid Prime is the best selling Metroid game, came out in 2002 and sold 2.8 million units. But that's kind of interesting because the GameCube was Nintendo's worst performing system. So its best performing game was on the worst performing system.
Outside of the Wii U.
Yes. Yeah. Outside of the Wii U.
and Virtual Boy. But
yeah. Well, does that even count? But
no.
What do you guys think?
I think his concerns are definitely valid. I think I think you nailed it, Casey. Like, the best selling Metroid game was on Nintendo's worst selling console. And you look at the way stuff has been selling historically on Switch, which is a system that has already, doubled, tripled the amount of sales that the GameCube did globally. Like, it's crushing it. That's a perfect place to reintroduce that franchise. And secondly, I think for like the posterity of the sort of historical element of it, it's nice to give a game or a series of games like that new life on a system that's contemporary that a lot of people have hooked up that they're playing every single day. You would potentially expose an entire new audience of people to the Metroid franchise for the very first time, people who have maybe only met those characters through something like Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that'd be super, super cool. And you know, if kids and babies don't want to play it, then us big, strong people can play it.
Yes.
Us tough guys and girls.
Go back.
I'm not worried about Metroid being too complex because we've seen complex games work well on their own before, even on a Nintendo console. It is also interesting that the best-selling Metroid games are the ones that weren't made by Nintendo Japan. They were by Rare.
Retro.
It's mixed up. Mm-hmm. And even when Sakamoto, the Metroid creator, came back and made Other M, it didn't do well. Because I think, and partly because they actually tried to expand too much, they gave voice acting, they gave Samus a weird backstory, and people didn't really resonate with that too much. Yeah. I do feel like Metroid's core tenets about isolation exploration are good. I think you could expand those into a broader thing. Like by Metroid Prime 3, we had multiple plans to go between, and that was a pretty cool evolution of that. But I don't know if it needs the Mass Effect treatment so much, but I would like to see that universe expand. Not necessarily with Samus going and saying like, hey guys, let's all be a team. Like, you can still get your missions and go into a new area by yourself, but knowing that there's people like out there in the universe talking with you might be a compromise.
I'm fine with it just staying the same, Just give me the same thing that I like and I know that I like. But for me, the draw of Metroid is it is the exploration. It is the isolation. And it's kind of like, I don't really need to know the motivations of why Samus is a bounty hunter in outer space. Like, that seems pretty... I'm fine with sort of filling those blanks in. I think it's the reason that I never really liked the prequels, because the story that I had invented for Darth Vader was much better than the story George Lucas told, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily need to have it explained to me. That being said, if they said that there's a new Metroid like RPG that's coming out, you know, next year or whatever, I would be all over it. Like, I just love when they do something unexpected with something familiar. Like, that's my favorite thing, where I can't wrap my head around, you know, easily what this could be. Boom. Just like, I have the faith that could do right by it if they were to announce something like that. Or like, you know, Metroid Kart. There we go. Boom.
As a quick aside, though, like, a game that I would love to see get a Mass Effect kind of treatment would be F-Zero. If you expand that into like a universe of like going on races, doing bounty hunt missions, having a team and a crew together, like, I think F-Zero could be that game.
As much as I want to go off-road with this conversation, we are unfortunately out of time for this week. But Marshall, I guess to sum up the answer to your question, I think we're just banking on the Nintendo Switch's success to boost interest in the Metroid series, and just hope that people being interested in Switch means they'll be interested in new Nintendo IPs.
Smarten up, kids.
Play Metroid. Yes. So anyway, that is about all the time we have left for this week's NBC. Remember, you can always catch us every Thursday at 3 p.m. on IGN.com or your favorite podcasting platform. And if you're watching another platform, look out for us on those podcasting platforms where we are all the time. And if you want to submit your own questions, you can write to us at NBC@IGN.com or respond to our weekly question blog post on the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Thank you so much for watching. And remember, NBC is the only place you can.
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Woo me.
The biggest gaming event of the year is IGN's Summer of Gaming, and it's almost here. Tune in beginning Thursday, June 4th to see the latest and greatest in game reveals, news, trailers, next-gen coverage, and more. And on June 5th, we kick off our first ever IGN Expo, where you'll get first looks at world premiere game trailers, exclusive game demos, and interviews you won't find anywhere else. IGN's Summer of Gaming, only on IGN and IGN One on your Samsung TV Plus.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.